This is Packer and Durham on ACCM and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Dino Babers is scheduled to join us coming up in about 15 minutes or so. We've not had Coach on since the summer. It's been a while for Coach.
Yeah.
We look forward to having Dino back on here. That'll be good.
Yep.
We had baseball. Absolutely. We had baseball. We had baseball last night, though, Mr. Durham. And for the most part,
yeah, we did.
It was a very successful night of ACC baseball with one exception. But we're going to take care of that right now.
All right. Let's roll the highlights. How about Foley Field, Athens, Georgia?
Hello.
Georgia Tech and Georgia for the first time this year. We get to the early stages of the game. Third baseman Justin Henry Malloy, 3-run shot. And that staked Georgia Tech to a 3-0 lead. And then the Jackets get Dalton Smith to go to 2-0, surrendered just one earned run on two hits in three innings. And Luke Bartnicki shut down the Dogs late, 7-5, the final last night at Foley Field for Danny Hall's 1,301 win.
And we appreciate
congratulations, Coach Hall.
And we appreciate the SEC Network showcasing that game for Georgia Tech. That was awfully kind of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom Hart, KP, did a nice job last night. Lots of conversation about the ACC and really good stuff. Nice job, fellas.
A little double dip for the conference. Obviously, we take care of you here, and the SEC Network showcasing Georgia Tech. Appreciate that. It's excellent.
There you go. Yep. Let's go to Tallahassee. Matthew Nelson on the show yesterday. And what's he do?
Yard.
Dinger. That's right. 19 home runs now for Nelson on the year. Florida State a winner over the Hatters
of
Stetson. 9-5, the final at Mike Martin Field, Dickhauser Stadium. There it goes. Off the bat of 63. Just stand there, young man. No need to reach up. It's out.
He is a player.
19th last night. Most for a Seminole in 12 years. Four more than any other player in the country. Nelson also threw out his 12th base runner of the year. He's thrown out 48% of the attempted base stealers this season. 9-5 the final in Tallahassee. Notre Dame 8, the Fighting Adam Amines 7 last night. Valpo on the losing end. Irish end up in a game that had 4 lead changes, 2 ties. I like that look right there.
Yep.
Just so you know.
Yep.
Notre Dame's now 21-8 on the season. Carter Putz, Spencer Myers, big nights for Notre Dame in the win. As Putz had 3 RBIs, Myers reached base 4 times. So Notre Dame a big win. Can't say so much for Valpo's look, by the way. UVA beat Liberty 6-5 the final. Virginia 6 runs in their final 3 at-bats to come from behind to win. Nice win for the Cavaliers. Steven Schock credited with his second win of the year for Virginia. He stranded 3 runners in the 8th, left the tying run at 2nd in the top of the 9th. So Brian O'Connor's team, a nice midweek win over the Flames. So there you have it. Ready to see the rest of the scoreboard?
It was a good night. Good night for the ACC. Like I said, everybody won except one team.
NC State beat Appalachian 7-3. Wake Forest and Davidson got in a shootout that was on ACC Network last night. I think they played to about midnight. 17-12 the final.
6 home runs by the Deacs. 6 bombs
including
by the folks.
Bobby Seymour.
Yeah, hit a couple. Hit a 2 out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy.
There you go. Virginia Tech blanks the Buccaneers of East Tennessee State. Miami shuts out Florida Gulf Coast. Mike Hill and the Charlotte 49ers get a win. Pack?
The AD, Mike Hill, old 4-1 buddy.
4-1 in Chapel Hill.
Yeah. That was a little homecoming visit there. Coach Woodward going back to his old stomping grounds. And all the runs, by the way, in that game in the 10th inning. It was zip through 9.
Wow.
4-1 your final. That was the only L for the league last night. But the Charlotte 49ers off to a great start. They're top 15 in the country. And I'll say one thing. I sent a note. Aaron Fitt, who does great work on D1 Baseball, was on the radio show the other day on Monday. And I asked him about the ACC. Notre Dame's an incredible story. Pitt is a great national story. Both of them. And he still said, you know what, Louisville is probably still the team to beat, but Notre Dame and Pitt are legit. I said, well, give me one team that can join the mix from the ACC here in the second half. He said, you know what, be right. careful. Watch out. He's buying the NC State Wolfpack. Elliott Amon. He thinks NC State is ready to go on a run. And I sent a note to Coach. Just said, hey, I'm just telling you, man, Aaron Fitt thinks you guys are ready to go make a run. Florida State's playing much better, too. So, listen, it's going to be a great stretch run in May. And ACC baseball tournament right here in my backyard in Uptown Charlotte. And that will be a really, really high-level entertaining event. We look forward to that.
Absolutely right. We're being entrusted with announcing all conference teams again. The women's lacrosse. The women's lacrosse all-conference team has been announced, and we're pleased to share it with you as well. We're not breaking it. It was already announced. North Carolina has 5 first-team selections. Syracuse had 8 total, the most in the league. Here is the all-ACC first-team attack. Jamie Ortega, Charlotte North, Megan Terrell, Katie Hoag, Samantha Lynch, Maddie Jenner, Megan Carney, and Gabby Rosenwig. All on that first team attack. And the first team defense and goaltenders. Allie Mastriani of North Carolina, Belle Smith, Boston College, Paige Petty of Virginia Tech, Emma Trenchard of Carolina, Sarah Cooper of Syracuse, Holly Schlicker, I hope, from Boston College, Taylor Marino of Carolina, Bridget Dehan of Notre Dame. First team midfield defense and goaltenders. That is the All-ACC women's lacrosse team. So congratulations to the ladies there.
Wish Megan Carney a speedy recovery. She is a tremendous player. That's a big loss for Syracuse as far as postseason play. Megan's been on with us before, and she is a tremendous player. Wish her the best.
Yep. 844-SAY-ACCN. What college athletes do you follow intently as pros? Lanny in Florida is next on Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life. Lanny.
Morning, gents. Thanks for letting me join.
Yes, sir.
Sure.
I never miss a show. Even if I have to go podcast, I never miss a show. Start every day with y'all. Appreciate your show. Nice. So I got three
Thank
for you.
Okay.
I'm going to start with Buster Posey, who I think tackle love.
Buster,
then
Buster,
I'm go
Buster.
Charlie Ward.
Oh, Charlie's yes, sir. Going too.
Yep. Yeah. Next, going with Charlie Ward. He and I graduated the same semester. So there's my two fastballs down the middle, ready for my changeup.
Yep.
I grew up in Maryland, so I'm going to throw Albert King at you.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
A really good call. You know, we keep forgetting about Maryland since they decided to take their ball and go somewhere else. But, you know, I still miss the old Terps in the ACC. I got to tell you. Still missing. They had some great, great games, rivalries, and Albert King, man. Man. Those Maryland teams were good, boy. Watch out. That's a good call.
King Albert. Yep. Let's go to Tim in South Carolina. Tim, good morning. Welcome to Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life.
Good morning. My list, I'm a big Clemson fan, graduated in 1981, right before Packer got to Clemson. And William Perry was my first choice because he was just such a charismatic. He could have made a lot more money on endorsements if he could have stayed healthy and, you know, his weight problem. But he was such a great that smile of his and those commercials, the Burger King commercials he did.
Yeah.
And LeVarne Kirkland, number two, I thought was the best linebacker to come out of Clemson.
Big Kirk.
Jerry Butler, I thought was one of the best receivers.
That's a good one. Jerry Butler caught that big touchdown pass in Columbia that night.
Sure did.
Oh, that was one of the greatest games.
Sure did.
I mean, Clemson had the game, and then all of a sudden, Carolina came back, and then, I tell you, Fuller to Butler was a good combination.
Tim, South Carolina came back.
No, wait a minute. No, I'm going to take up for Tim here because Tim's from South Carolina.
Tim's talking about the Palmetto, Carolina.
Okay. Yeah, let me tell you something. Right. When you live in the state of South Carolina and you say Carolina,
thanks, Tim.
It's those group. That's that group down there in Columbia. But it's the only state in the country where you say Carolina, and that's what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
That's a good list, though.
I know. I just
LeVon Kirkland's a good call, too. Big Kirk now. Great dude.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Welcome back to the program, the head football coach of the Syracuse Orange. Always great to visit with Dino Babers. Coach, good morning. Thanks. Appreciate you being a part of the program.
Good morning. How are you guys
doing?
So
how goes it? We're good. You got one left, right? We got one practice left for the spring for the Orange. Is that where we are?
Yeah, we're at practice. We finished practice 14 on Tuesday morning, and we've got one more tomorrow starting at 6 a.m. And when that gets finished, we'll be finishing up our finals and getting ready for our summer preparation before we go to those strenuous one-a-days that the young people all talk about here in August.
Hey, listen, we know this has been an upside-down year, right? But, man, the good news, Coach, is we're light years ahead of where we were this time a year ago. And I know that people want to put rearview mirror and you need to put it behind you, which I know you have. So tell us what you've seen so far in this spring practice combination. What? Give me the good news out of Syracuse.
You know, I think the good news out of Syracuse is we had a lot of young people play, and maybe not by design, but we had to put them out there. And the outcomes of some of those games, or a lot of those games, were not what we wanted. But the one thing that all those young people got was experience. I mean, they played in the ACC. They played against guys that were better than them sometimes, taller, faster, stronger. And it's affected their offseason. They realize how far they're behind as far as from a strength standpoint. I'm talking about our younger freshmen. I want to say we've got 57 out of our 85 scholarships are freshmen. And between the two or three classes with the special year where the guys get to return. So this is a very, very, very young team with some very knowledgeable, experienced guys in the super senior class, in the junior class, and in the sophomore class. And I'll tell you what, we came in this spring, and our thing we wanted to do is give these young people their entire tool belt and make sure that they had the fundamentals that they needed to have a better outcome versus the competition that you have to play in the ACC. And I'm very, very proud of where these guys are at. I'm very, very proud of where they battled, a very physical spring. And, you know, for the ones that survived it and the ones who didn't, we all got better.
You mentioned the young people. When I saw your team in November, it was basically freshmen, redshirt freshmen. And I know we were talking, I think we had the conversation then in the fall about how roster management would be impacted by the extra year. What kind of scenarios played out for that? And of those younger people who played a lot last year, and I'm thinking about Greenwood and Hannah and Carter and Williams and Stephon Thompson, I mean, which of those guys have you seen, particularly out of the secondary, take a step for you?
You know, I think that all those guys, now some of those guys, as crazy as it sounds, those young people playing in those games, and I'm not going to give you their names, but some of those guys didn't have an opportunity to go through the spring. There was injuries from the fall and playing in guys that were so much older, so much more physical, and now they survived the season, but some of those injuries needed time to recover. And some of those cats had to sit and watch. Not all of them, but some of them. Yeah. And I think that is also going to help us because there's growth in the family. And those guys that had to sit and watch those 14 practices also understand how stressful and how committed everybody was to getting better. And I think they're eager to get their opportunity to get the clearance from the doctor so they can go through their summers and really be ready to join this team in August so we can get back out there and erase some wrongs.
Tommy DeVito seems like he's been there for 15 years. What's the quarterback room like in the competition this spring at quarterback?
The competition's great. You know, I think all those quarterbacks have been competing their tails off. They look much better. But, again, it's going to come down to we need those guys to be the leaders in the room. Our quarterbacks are our racing car drivers for our cars, and We want to get the good Tommy DeVito back, and we're going to see where Garrett can do. And we've got Jacoby in, and we got Dylan. We got a very talented freshman in Justin. And we think that it's the most competitive room we've had in a long, long time. And they're not done yet. 14 practices is not the end. And we've got to continue that growth over the summer and then continue it during August and see where this stuff all ends up in September.
You know, we talked during the course of the season last year in preparation for games. I know there were highs and lows. You had to almost go what blindfolded into each day. You weren't sure what was going to happen. Pack and I used to say something at breakfast might change by lunch, and then by dinner you weren't sure again. What did you take away from a year ago that helps you in what you want to do with this football program? As hard as it was, what do you take away to process to say, hey, we're going to do something. We're not going to do this. We are going to do this type deal.
You know, it really makes me think back to my father. It's, you know, we were a military family. My father was gone a lot. And, you know, we had our daddy rules and we had our mama rules. And when daddy was around, we'd do what in the hell he told us to do. But really, mama was running the show, you know. But it comes down that there was a lot of distractions, and some teams dealt with it better than others. And I don't think we dealt with it that well, and we got too distracted. And when it comes to dad, those dads sometimes do. The family can have all these different thoughts on what we should do, and then dad's going to come in and say, "Well, you know what? That's all nice, and I really appreciate all those opinions, but we're doing this. So pack your bags, make up your bed, and we're about to roll out of here." And I think I did a better job of that. There was a lot of distractions. After the season was over, I tried to eliminate as many distractions as I could, and I wanted them to totally focus on the little things of getting better, fundamentally getting better, getting bigger, stronger, and working on their academics, because all those things are going to come into play so that we can be relaxed and really get into a groove in the fall on turning this thing around.
Coach, I've got the perfect follow-up question with that answer. Now that you establish mommy rules and daddy rules, what comes into play when you're an empty nester? How does that work?
I need a dog or something. All I do is I come home and I hear telephone calls with the girls and I get a high, and then they get an hour conversations with their moms, you know. But
that's right.
You know, I will say this, Mark. It reminds me of that song. Now, this is an older song. The Cats in the Cradle and the Silver Spoon?
Yeah.
Where they grew up to be just like you. I grew up to be just like you, Dad. I grew up to be just like you.
Yeah.
I'm one of these guys. I have no problem talking to people face to face. And, you know, I kind of like this Zoom FaceTime thing. But put me on a telephone where I can't and hold a telephone to my ear, even though I love to recruit, it's kind of boring. You know what I mean? I'd rather see somebody. And those girls, they're just like their dad. They don't like talking on the phone. I mean, if you're going to talk, shoot me a text message. But I don't have time for all that stuff. But I love the heck out of them. And hopefully during vacation, I'll get an opportunity to see them.
By the way, speaking of, as a follow-up to that, and I was going to ask you this, given the pandemic and what coaches are going through, this transfer portal's got everybody head on a swivel. Name, image, and likeness, another issue coming down that you have to deal with. How do you get away, Coach? How do you reboot from a pandemic year, a tough year that you've already put behind you? You're enthusiastic about what's going to happen in 21. How do you get away from all of this? What's the plan there?
I don't have the answer. I'm terrible. I mean, I'm terrible. Unless my daughters plan the vacation away where I can't do work, you know, I can't get away from it. They know. I mean, I need a destination vacation away with my girls planning everything and telling me what to do, because if not, I'm back in a playbook. I'm back in football. I'm trying to visit coaches while we're at someplace on vacation. You know, God, family, football, that's how I roll, and I don't get real far away from that.
I know the feeling.
Hey, wait, Dino, that sounds like Packer. That's why he's got to go to some desert island or something in order to get away. Because if he doesn't, he'll work. He'll find a way to work.
Coach and I are on the same exact page. I mean, all I like to do is work. And, you know, I don't need it anywhere. But you know what? Basically, at some point in time, somebody needs to grab you and say, listen, we're leaving and you're coming with us. And that's kind of what's going to happen to me in a couple of weeks. And it's all girls, Coach. I get it. It's my wife and the two girls. Dad, here's where we're going. Okay, cool, great, whatever. And down the road we go. But I'm with you. I mean, you just keep grinding. That's what you do. That's what you do.
Just keep grinding. Yep. I'm telling you, it's the truth. That's the gospel.
Yep. Sure is.
We have talked about the drastic change from last year to this year. The one thing I know you want to see, and we touched on it during the break, is the Orange faithful in the seats at the Dome come the fall. Last year was just and we were there for a couple games, Dino, and I had a couple games at Pittsburgh the same way. I know you played one at Pittsburgh that was like an empty stadium, and college football just didn't feel right, my man.
You know, I had the privilege of working at Texas A&M, and they talked about the 12th man, and it was absolutely amazing down there. If you guys have been there, the 12th sure. man is real in College Station, and this is not about Texas A&M right now. The Dome advantage, the home crowd and playing in the Dome is a huge advantage for Syracuse. And I can't tell you how much that hurt us. And I can't wait to get our fan base back in that brand new stadium that they have not had the pleasure of being in yet. They have not sat in a seat. Those football fans haven't. And to get that place full and to get our 12th man back so that we can have the advantages that we need to have in this conference at home.
Amen. Yeah.
Great to see you. Best to Susan and the girls. And good luck on that dog.
Hey,
you know,
Coach, let me help you out here, because I'm the dog guy. Wes is the cat guy. Man's best friend. When you need somebody to talk to, and we just did a billboard with Chester looking at me with his head tilted. Dogs know, man. Dogs can connect. I'm just telling you.
I'll tell you what. Here's my connection story. I've got a picture up in my office of our German Shepherd that we had. Her name was Coda, and the dog has passed away. We put the dog down, but it was 13 years, unbelievable dog. And the picture is me sitting on the porch with the dog. It's a taken from the back. I'm on the porch on the phone with a recruiting call. The dog is sitting right next to me. Okay. There's a squirrel. The squirrel is running across the front of the yard. The dog is looking at me like, can I go get the squirrel? And I'm going, mm-mm. You can't get the squirrel while I'm making the recruiting call. But I'm telling you, for a football coach, I mean, I've never been a cat guy. I'm sure cats are really nice, but there's something about having that dog next to you to take some long walks, and that really makes you right. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be small. But I kind of like those dogs.
Yeah, they know, man. They can pick up on all your vibes. They get it. They totally get it. I'm with you.
Hey, stay well. We look forward to connecting with you again. Have a great
summer. Guys, let's do it again soon.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Now let's bring on a real expert. Rachel DiCecco joins us, and she knows all, which will help us and everybody else, for that matter. Rachel, first of all, welcome to the show. Good morning. I hope life's treating you well.
Can't complain. Life is great. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. All right, so here we go. We got North Carolina rocking and rolling. They've been fantastic all season long. We'll just ask you the million-dollar question. Can anybody get them? Can anybody beat this crew coming up here for the ACC tournament?
The only team that can beat North Carolina is North Carolina at this point. Honestly, they are just stacked talent-wise, having an incredible season. You know, they are going to be really hard to beat unless they have a really off day and the other team has their best day. I think that they're really the one to beat through ACC's and NCAA's.
Rachel, we have joked about both the men's and women's side here potentially being an all-ACC show when we get to the national championship. So at this stage, with the league being so good, and I guess I'm asking the question, we all know what the big prize is. So how important is this prize and the competitive level that we'll see? I'm always curious because we don't see this very much in like lacrosse, soccer, baseball. We do see it in basketball where, you know, like national seeds don't necessarily win their conference tournaments. That's kind of where I'm going with this. How locked in do you think these teams will be given the status of what lies ahead for them, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be incredibly locked in. I think five of these teams are definitely going to get into the NCAAs, but six, maybe seven, depending on how they play. It's also, you know, conference pride. I think everybody wants to knock off UNC. Duke and Notre Dame have come within one of doing that, so I don't think anybody's holding anything back this weekend.
All right, with that said, Rachel, and the way it lines up here, because North Carolina's the one seed, Louisville's the eight, you'll get that game at noon Eastern time. They get the winner of Notre Dame-Duke. Now, you just mentioned, they're the two that really kind of pushed North Carolina and made it interesting. With that said, again, I'm not going to disrespect anybody here by fast-forwarding the clock here. Who, again, you just said North Carolina's the only one that can beat North Carolina. However, Duke, Notre Dame made it interesting. Which one of those two has the best chance to make it really interesting if they hook up in the second round?
I would say Duke. They've got Maddie Jenner at the draw, who's just dominant. I mean, she's beating draw opponents. They've got more than 100 draws than their opponents do. And the name of the game with North Carolina is possession. If they have the ball, they're going to score. So if Maddie Jenner's able to be successful at that center draw circle and they're able to kind of play keep away a little bit with UNC, I think they have a good shot. Now, they just played them, so I think that recency is going to be difficult for them because UNC is going to have a fresh memory of that game. But really, I think ultimately, you know, it's going to come down to the draw and just stopping all the weapons that UNC has.
All right. The way we set this up, Rachel, Anish was here on Monday, and he says Charlotte North is the most exciting player, men's or women's, in the ACC. Give us your take on what she's done for BC this year.
Anish told no lies. She is incredible. You know, watching her play, you just gasp. And I laughed at the last game because it just is unreal what she's able to do. She has like an arsenal of weapons. She can score from anywhere in any sort of way, from the 8 meter, from behind, from the ground, with four or five people marking her. Her energy that she brings, she's just so fun to watch, and the intensity. But the best thing that we hear about Charlotte North is what a great teammate she is. So when you have a leader that's that talented in skills and she brings the off-field leadership, I mean, it's just truly incredible. I am grateful to be able to watch her sort of on her journey these last few years.
Rachel, Syracuse is the number two seed, but they lose Megan Carney, who is a tremendous talent, great player, and a really nice person. We've had her on the show. How big an influence does that have on Syracuse, not only in this tournament, but even moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's been the Meg show for Syracuse this year. Meg Tyrell, Meg Carney. It's going to be really hard for them. I do think, you know, Sierra Cockrell, as you see here, will step up. Emma Tyrell had a huge game Saturday against BC. You know, they lost Emily Harris-Chuck first game of the season, and they had to regroup and bounce back. And I think they have the ability to do the same. You know, the emotional part of one of your leaders going down with an ACL injury at the end of season, you know, they could use that to their advantage and sort of play for Emily and Meg. And I think that that team has the ability to do that.
Yeah. You also get Notre Dame and Duke in this thing. We keep coming back to that because the winner gets Carolina. It just seems that a lot of this story will be told in that particular game. If you're going to see any of these over the next couple days, is that the one you've got to see? Whoever Carolina might, we're assuming Carolina beats Louisville, they then play the winner in Notre Dame Duke. Is that the game that could very well determine a lot about this tournament, including who wins it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there's an upset in that second round, it changes the landscape because you've got BC and Syracuse on the other side of the bracket that potentially could come home with the ACC championship if there's an upset in the second round.
All right, so give me a dark horse. Again, well, you know what North Carolina is, right? So if everybody else, you know the Syracuse injury situation, Charlotte North's dynamic with BC. You mentioned Notre Dame-Duke, toss-up game should be great. Both of them gave North Carolina a run. You got Virginia Tech, who just upset Virginia over the weekend. I mean, so give me the team that you say, listen, if somebody could fly underneath the radar, keep an eye on – fill in the blank.
I mean, they're all – no one in the ACC is under the radar. I think if there's going to be an upset – I mean, Louisville is going to have a really hard time getting past UNC in that first round. I think Virginia Tech, as you said, just came off a huge win against Virginia, so they may be sort of riding that high, that motivation. So potentially an upset against Cuse. But that would be – if I had to pick one, that might be it in the first round at least.
All right. Now, Rachel, before we let you go, we're not letting anybody – who knows women's lacrosse, get off this program. In fact, Gary Gate went a little further down the road yesterday on this than I thought he would. Didn't you think, Pac?
Yeah.
I mean, when he called the rule kind of silly. Mark and I have been enamored this entire year with the goal scoring in women's lacrosse and the mild-mannered to aggressive stick drops that occur. Now, I'll ask you, who's got the best stick drop, and is this rule as silly as Gary Gate thinks it is because the technology and the equipment is now much more refined than it used to be, I guess?
He is correct. I do think it's silly. It's got to be Charlotte North because she acts like she's been there before. She's just – no matter how insane her goal is or how important it is, she scores, she does her fist pump, and then she just gently drops the stick onto the turf. Like, you know what? I've been here a million times. You can have it. Have a look at it. Nothing's going to be wrong. Acting like she's been there, I think makes it the best for her because she's not trying to throw it or flip it or make a statement. She's just putting it down gently.
Rachel, but let me give you a theory on that. I think, though, that Charlotte knows she's getting ready to score in about 20 seconds later. So it's like, hey, as soon as I can put it down and get it right back, I'm ready to go. So I think your theory's whacked a little bit because I really think she knows she's going to score. Hey, I scored 10 one time. So why would I toss it 20 yards down the field where I got to go waste time and go pick it up? I'm going to put it down right here. Let's check it. Let's go. Because get the ball back to me. I'm getting ready to score again. So I think she is just, yeah, it's been there, done that. But I think she just knows the next time she touches it, she's going to score.
So you think it's efficiency for her?
Yes, and she's smart. That's the other thing. Yeah. She's like you. You know, you got that Ivy background, so I think she understands, hey, the quicker we get moving, let's rock it. I mean, like, listen, if Wes and I were playing it, we're tossing that thing up in the stands, right? We're a bunch of idiots out there goofing around with all that deal. That's what I think.
There's a lot of truth to that, Rachel. I mean, I promise you, I've already suggested it. I mean, I've asked, you know, I asked Megan Carney this. I asked Charlotte this. I've asked Katie Hogan, Jamie Ortega this. If I scored a goal, I'd take that stick and throw it 30 yards down the field. The official would be on a soft jog.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, I mean, that's where to be. Just saying.
Even run with it for about 20 yards and then toss it. So that way, if it's on TV, right. I finally scored and then helicopter that bad boy across midfield. That's what I'd do.
Yeah.
I like that, too. I like it, too.
All right.
I'm sticking with Charlotte. Yeah. She might be efficient. She knows she's going to get the next draw.
See, that's that Princeton background. You know, it's just like, hey, listen, I got things right to there. Do. Now, you guys are wasting my time. I got stuff to do. This thing gets started at high noon today, and I got these two bozos wasting time about stick toss. That goes back to that Ivy League education, and that's why you connect with so many teams in this league. I get it. We get it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Hey, Rachel, thanks for the time. Enjoy the championship. We appreciate you joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
You bet. Rachel DiCecco, one of our ACC lacrosse analysts. The coverage from Chapel Hill starts at noon today. Karen at the Dorrance Field is where they'll play the lacrosse championships on the Carolina campus. And how about that? You got soccer in Cary. You got lacrosse in Chapel Hill. Not telling what else is going on, Pac. It's a busy weekend in the Triangle.
Well, I was going to say, and then you get the NCAA soccer championships, men and women, begin this weekend right there outside of Cary.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. It's Wake Med, yeah.
And then you got baseball rocking and rolling. Again, spring sports are great, man. And, you know, we were deprived of this last year because we faded to black with the shutdown with the pandemic. So we're kind of experiencing all this spring sports for the first time on ACC Network, which has been great. Been a blast talking about it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Speaking of New York life, how about the life of the head basketball coach right there in central New York, Jim Boeheim, because Coach Boeheim at Syracuse has a little skin in the game coming up this week for the Run for the Roses, which is on my bucket list, and we are going to do this. If it's the last thing we ever accomplish on this show, we are going to go. We're going to be live from the Derby. I'm telling you, that is if I don't do anything else in my very brief ESPN career, that is on my list. That is on my radar. That we take this show and we go to. We're going to Louisville, and we're going to have bourbon, and we're going to do shows, and we're going to watch horses. That is, I'm telling you, ESPN may call me today and go, Mr. Packer, you know, it's really been nice, but you need to go now.
You need to turn your playbook in. Yeah. You turn your playbook
You need to take that parking sticker off your Ford F-150 and mail that back to us. We really don't need you anymore. But I'm telling you, it's on my list to get this show to the Derby because I want to go to Louisville. I want to go to Louisville. I want to see the people of Louisville, Kentucky.
All right. Okay, Jim Boeheim is going to Louisville this weekend because, as he said, quote, I own two hairs on the tail of the slowest horse in the Derby. That's his quote. Of course it is. Hidden Stash is 50-1. Worse even than the Blue Plate Special Soup and Sandwich. Hidden Stash has collected $130,000 in non-restricted stake earnings. Essential Quality, who's the Derby favorite, $2.2 million.
Yikes. Could be a problem.
Can you bet? We need Drew Brooks,
who expert.
Is one half of the Lumberjacks.
Betting expert.
But an expert at wagering on things. Drew, can we bet Hidden Stash to come in last? That's the question I have for you this morning.
I like the $5.
You cannot bet Hidden Stash to come
in
last?
$5 Quinella box on this Boeheim horse finishing dead last, please. I'm sorry, sir. That's not accepted here.
Seriously?
Wes,
we can't bet Hidden Stash to finish last?
No, you usually bet on horses to win, place, or show. I don't think you can bet to last place.
I tell you
false, though, tomorrow might be the question.
I tell you what. We are doing our audience a complete disservice if we don't have some kind of goofy bet on the show about where Hidden Stash finishes at the Derby, since the coach, Jim Boeheim, and I wonder how much coin he put into this horse, since he owns two hairs on a horse that's 50-1. We've got to have some fun with this by Friday about where we think Hidden Stash finishes, assuming the horse does finish in the Kentucky Derby. We have to do that.
How about we get Sean McDonough on here to do an impression of Boeheim breaking down his horse?
That would be
good. So good luck to Coach Boeheim.
Yes, sir.
And the two hairs on the tail of the 50-1 horse that he owns.
What a great
Wouldn't
name
that be
too.
Something if that came? Of course, Hidden it would stash. Be. It would be just like Boeheim to win the thing. Right?
No, that's just
barely gets in
50
and then
to
wins.
One. But you know, it would be that horse's deal. Literally, if it got to the backstretch and just jumped on the fence, because Syracuse is always on the fence, aren't they? I think of Syracuse basketball. We get down to crunch time. It's like, are they in? I don't know. Are they out? I don't know. You know, how many quad four wins you got, coach? You break it down. Maybe that horse just literally rides the fence coming down the stretch. We're not sure if it's going to finish or not.
All right.
So here's something for you. The Hidden Stash drew the 13th pole position. The last horse to win from the 13th position at the Kentucky Derby was a horse called Forward Pass. But here's the kicker. He's the only Derby horse that won that didn't cross the finish line first. He was given the victory after Dancer's Image was disqualified.
Oh, man.
That's what I'm talking about right there. That is absolute Boeheim magic right there.
We've got to get to Louisville. Yep. This conversation does nothing but add added incentive to take Packer and Durham to the Commonwealth for the week leading into the Run for the Roses. I'm just telling you.
Oh, let me tell you. We are culling together people on the ACC network. Yes, I'm looking at you, Luke Hancock. Yes, I'm looking at you, Eric Wood.
Coveted invite.
Coveted invite.
Come on.
Oh, I'd like to see the coveted invites hat.
She can even bring her fiance. We'll even throw him in. Eh, come on. You're part of the family. Let's go. We got to do this. We've got to do this.
You're really? I know. This is Tyree even wants us to do this.
Satterfield wants in. Move the spring game to the 30th of April next year. I tell you who else wants this.
No, I think we
Amy did. Rosenfeld okay, wants to do this. One of this ESPN executives.
Oh, we're going into management.
I'm pulling out all the stops to make this eventually happen.
Oh, my gosh.
Packer and Durham. Aaron all Katzman. Right. Well, let Katzman hang out with us for a while.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.